As a result of the night's successes, which Bismarck didn't disguise, I had a raging headache and a heaving stomach on the morning of my departure from Schönhausen. So, I remember very little of it, which is no loss. For that matter, my recollections of the journey north to Strakenz are hazy, too. I've travelled too far in my time to be anything but bored by it, and there was nothing to see that I recall except flat, snowy fields, the occasional village, and bleak woodlands of bare, black trees. Rudy was full of spirits, as usual, and de Gauté was his smooth, civil self. But I knew he wouldn't forget or forgive that Schlager thrust in the guts. I hadn't forgotten the two cuts I owed him, either. So, we were even there. He never referred to our encounter, but now and then in the coach I'd catch his dark eyes on me, and then they'd slide away, looking anywhere but at me. He was one who wouldn't be sorry of the excuse to draw a bead on my back if I tried to run for it. Following Bismarck's lead, both of them had dropped the pretense of calling me Highness. Bersonin's theory, as Bismarck had called it, being well enough in my training period, I suppose, but now considered unnecessary. But they lost no chance of lecturing me on such subjects as the geography of Strakenz, the ceremonial forms of its court, and the details of the wedding ceremony. I suppose I took it all in, for there was nothing else to do. But it has all gone now. We were 3 days on the road, and the last afternoon of the journey took us deep into forest country, all ghostly and silent under the snow. It was very beautiful and solemn, with never a soul to be seen along the rough track winding among the trees, until about 4 in the afternoon we stopped in a little clearing where a small hut stood, with thin smoke wreathing up from its chimney into the steely sky. There were 2 or 3 brisk-looking fellows in peasant clothes to rub down the horses and usher us into the cottage. Not that I took them for peasants, for I heard 2 of them in talk with Rudy. They were gentlemen, by German standards, but tough, active customers for all that. The kind who'll cut your throat and send back the wine at dinner afterwards. We had a meal, Rudy and I, while de Gauté paced up and down and peered out at the darkening sky and consulted his watch, and fidgeted generally, until Rudy told him to leave off and made him sit down and have a glass of wine with us. I was getting fairly twitchy myself as the hours passed, and Rudy gave me a stiff brandy to steady me. 3 hours from now, says he, and you'll be tucked up in a silk nightgown with CG embroidered on it. God, I wish I was in your shoes. How many commoners have the chance to be royalty? I'll show you one who's ready to resign his crown any time, says I. The shivers were beginning to run up my spine. Nonsense! Give you 2 days and you'll be behaving as though you'd been born to the purple, issuing royal decrees against virginity, probably. What time is it, de Gauté? We should be moving. I heard the strain in his voice. Hee-ho! Says Rudy, stretching. He was as cool as though he was off for an evening stroll. Come along, then. There was a slight altercation just before setting out, when de Gauté, officiously helping me into my cloak, discovered my pistols in the pockets. I'd had them concealed in a pair of boots in my baggage at Schönhausen, and was determined that they were going with me. Rudy shook his head. Royalty don't carry sidearms except for ceremony. I do, says I. Either they go with me or I don't go at all. What good do you suppose they'll be, man? None, I hope. But if the worst happens, they'll perhaps buy me a little elbow room.